The views expressed on this program are those of the host and the participants.
All right, welcome back to Media Matters. I'm Bob McChesney, your host today on Mother's Day, May 11th, 2003, the first day of winter of this year, it seems like. An incredible drop in the temperature for the past 24 hours. And today is a really terrific day for us here on WILL AM 580. Our guest is going to be someone I think we can aptly call a living legend, one of the real pioneers of independent and alternative journalism. Really at the peak of his game, still going very strong. That's none other than Danny Schechter, well-known, I suspect, to many of the listeners in the WILL listening audience. Danny Schechter is the founder and executive director of MediaChannel.org, as well as the founder of Global Vision Incorporated. He's a prolific writer of media coverage and issues related to media. He has a weblog, News Dissector, every day, which can be found at MediaChannel.org. But that barely begins to tell you Danny Schechter's legacy and his role in independent and alternative journalism. He has won four Emmy Awards. He's worked for both ABC and CNN. His award-winning work has appeared in Newsday, the Boston Globe, the Columbia Journalism Review. He's been at Harvard as a Nieman Fellow for journalism. The list goes on and on. And now he has a new book out, which we're going to be talking about today, among other things, Media Wars, News at a Time of Terror, Dissecting Media Coverage After 9/11, just been published by Roman and Littlefield, with a foreword or an introduction by none other than Walter Cronkite. It is a pleasure to welcome to Media Matters Danny Schechter.
Pleasure, Bob. Of course, happy Mother's Day to the woman who is the mother of your children as well, and all other mothers who might be listening. And I hope you guys survive this storm. It seems like the weather is chaotic all over the country.
It's really been insane here. We've really gone through the cycle the last few days here. How's it been on the East Coast?
Well, I don't know. It's just funky, you know. You know, one day it's, you know, I joke with my friends that we have four seasons in one day. You know, it starts off, you know, kind of cold and rainy. It becomes spring and then summer and then it's winter again, you know.
Well, Danny, tell us a little bit, if you would, about the new book. What's Media Wars, News at a Time of Terror, Dissecting Media Coverage After 9/11.
Well, we've all just sort of survived the coverage of the Iraq War, with its constant, you know, updates, breaking news, alarmist forecasts of chemical and even nuclear weapons being possibly used, the armchair generals, the whole parade of kind of one-sided coverage, I think, that is now being denounced in the New York Review of Books by a Canadian novelist is simply disgusting, you know. But a lot of people who actually were in the media and some who were actually there are beginning to have second thoughts about it and talk about it. I began watching media coverage very, very closely on September 11th, actually. Our offices are, you know, in Manhattan on the West Side, not all that far from the World Trade Center. And you know, I began writing about what others were writing about, and I started this weblog on September 11th, and I did it every day for a year, sometimes 3,000 to 4,000 words a day, citing other people's work, not just my own. And some of that work is now collected in this book, Media Wars, along with other articles that I wrote and reports that were done by the Project on Excellence in Journalism and others that shows how a certain political patriotic correctness infiltrated into the media. When 9/11 first happened, there was a healthy, you know, period in the media, very short-lived, to saying, you know, why do they hate us? We need to look more deeply at what else is going on in the world, what's behind this, what actually happened here, calls for investigation and the like. Here we are.
How many minutes did that last, Danny?
Well, I didn't count the minutes, but there were voices raising these questions and magazines covering it, and then suddenly, here in New York, anyway, there was a great feeling of kind of unity in the city, and not a really warlike response. But once the administration decided to use 9/11 to advance its own agenda, what we began to see was that the newscasts began waving American flags. Anchors put, you know, flags on their pins and the graphics under the newscasts and the like, and they began to brand the news. You know, America Strikes Back, America, you know, America's War Against Terror, and all the rest of it. And it began to organize public opinion in a sense, to support a president who was also saying it's either, you know, either take our side or the other side, in a sense. You're either with us or against us. You're with me or you're with bin Laden. And that was the basic kind of polarization that began to take place in the media, and which was aided and abetted inside the media by outlets like Fox News and many so-called conservative media assets, commentators, pundits, and the like, who began, in a sense, to function as an echo chamber for the administration. And what I documented, Media Wars, is how the media went to war, in a sense, against the truth and against to mobilize public opinion to support a political agenda. And I think it's very, very dangerous, because what seems to be clear is that TV journalism, which had been compromised way before 9/11, TV journalism is a casualty in a way of the Iraq War. I don't think we've ever seen such a degraded spectacle of media in the service of the military, in the service of the administration, not only the embedded journalists, but the whole structure of the coverage, which went from the studio to the armchair general, to the Pentagon, to the State Department, to the White House, to the front of the war with the embedded journalists, back to the studio, in a loop that did not have any space or barely any time for any critical commentary, for anybody who was analyzing what was happening. In many instances, it was just pure wrong. Editor and publisher documented 15 stories. They're just totally inaccurate, and that just continued. And it wasn't just the information that was inaccurate. It was the impression that was created that was inaccurate. In other words, they were spinning a story, but they also created a storyline. The storyline, of course, was Saddam, Saddam, evil, evil. The storyline was weapons of mass destruction, which they still haven't been able to find, and many doubt even existed before the war, much less can be found after the war. And all of this shaped an opinion in the United States that rebounded to the advantage of the president, and with almost nothing other view, any counter-narrative being given any kind of airtime that was anywhere approximate to the amount of airtime devoted to this kind of newsathon, this marathon of coverage. And this is what I found very troubling. I think everybody who's looked at it closely has found troubling, and even that. But and now some people in the media are beginning to speak out, like Ashley Banfield. Mm-hmm. And some others.
We're talking to Danny Schechter today on Media Matters, a live show on Mother's Day. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. The phone lines are open. If you'd like to call in and talk to Danny, have a question or comment for him, the number is 333-9455. Our toll-free number for anywhere outside the area, 1-800-222-9455, and we'll be sure to get to you if you call in. In fact, we already have a caller, Danny.
But Bob, just before we go to the call,
sure.
I'd love to get your comment on this TV coverage. You've been looking at the whole history of journalism. You've written books about it. Where does this rate? Where does this rank, if you will?
Hey, this is my show, not yours, Schechter.
Okay. All right. Go ahead.
I was going to actually ask you the same question. I'd be very interested in your take. But let's go to the caller right now who I've got on the line. Line one, Champagne. You're on with Danny Schechter.
Yes. I'm wondering if your guests could maybe address the question of history, the knowledge of history of the American people, or even President Bush, and the responsibility of the media. Is it responsibility of the media just to talk about the last 24 hours or perhaps the last 50 years? And what brings that to mind is that in the last couple of days in the news, in listening to it and what the U.S. wants to do with the U.N. and Iraq oil and things of that nature, I've just begun to think that we're really pouring oil on the fire. If we're indeed trying, if the Bush administration, Carlyle Group, Bechtel, Halliburton, whoever, are trying to control Iraqi oil, if that's indeed true, it seems that we are really pouring oil on the fire in the Middle East, and we never look back at the last 50 years of why it is that the Iranian Revolution took place, about the fact that the Iranians tried to control their own oil resources, and instead of doing that, Britain and the United States imposed the Shah on them, and this is what led to the, so-called Shiite, Iranian Revolution.
I think you're wrong on one point, okay?
Okay.
And the one point is, I think many of these news programs are just referencing the last 15 minutes, never mind the last week or month or year. I mean, there is an incredible ahistoric, acontextual approach to news. There's no perspective, really. It's all like what's breaking at the moment. And often what's breaking at the moment creates an impression that's actually wrong or false and has to be revised and corrected by historians and by others after the fact. But, you know, what we have is a ratings-driven clash, politically-driven kind of orchestration of information that doesn't take time to really explain much. You know, before the war in Iraq started, only 13% of American young people, the people who went to fight the war, could find Iraq on a map, even knew where it was, okay? Well, you know, the news of the world has been cut back over the last 20 years, bureaus closed, less and less attention. Now we have, even on CNN, the Global Minute, you know, which is a ripoff of Rupert Murdoch's The World in a Minute, you know? So when you reduce news, in a sense, to an image-driven cavalcade, you know, a flood here, a disaster there, people dying here, it doesn't help people understand the world, much less the history of the region, the oil economy, American interests. In fact, interests are very rarely talked about. Issues are discussed, but interests are very rarely looked into in any depth.
All right. Caller, do you have any more comments you'd like to make?
Well, I guess I have a lot, but I'll let someone else go. And maybe some other people can participate in this discussion. I'd really be interested in hearing perhaps what people from Iran or the Arab world think about this. Okay?
Well, thank you very much. Well, Danny, a couple of questions that come up.
Great question.
Yeah, it's a great question. From her question and from your earlier comments and what you actually asked me, I'd like to ask you. I mean, do you think that the U.S. television news coverage of the war and of 9/11 and the war on terrorism along with that is worse than it would have been had these events happened in 1980 or 1965? Or is it really more or less the same? What's your sense of the historical trajectory? And let me preface that for our listeners by pointing out that you've been an active journalist since the 1970s. You've worked for major news media. You've worked for PBS, for NBC, or excuse me, ABC, for CNN. You've been on radio. You've done a lot of print. I mean, you have a lot of experience. So you come to this from the inside.
Well, you know, I think there has been a qualitative change and a qualitative decline. You know, my boss at 2020, who I used to fight with all the time, but, you know, trying to push a more progressive agenda in terms of coverage, and he would resist it, has just, you know, given an interview saying he thinks that, you know, we've seen the death of TV news. I mean, he's totally despondent about it.
Who is that?
Ob Weston.
Oh, sure.
Former executive producer of 2020. And you know, Marshall McLuhan some years ago made a comment, you know, many of his comments were very kind of cryptic, but he said, you know, the coverage is the war. There was no coverage, there'd be no war. The newsmen and the media men around the world are actually the fighters, not the soldiers anymore. And I think that's an insight into the important role that television and media plays in covering all politics, and war is politics by other means. You know, during the Vietnam War, we had three half-hour newscasts, okay, which managed to cover civil rights, it covered the economy, it covered politics, it covered what was happening in America and in other parts of the world, and the war in Vietnam. Today, we have three news networks covering only one story, and covering it almost identically, you know, cloning each other's coverage and relying on the live dramatic aspects of it, turning it into a soap opera, a kind of dramatic narrative, and often ousting, you know, if you will, all context, all background, all perspective that might offer any other way of looking at what it's about. And it keeps you in the minute, as this caller, you know, basically said, and it keeps you, in a sense, ignorant of what others are saying. You know, the interesting thing about this war is that we were able to see of those of us who watched BBC or Canadian broadcasting or reports on what was being shown in the Arab world, and our own company has a Global Vision News Network that has 350 news partners around the world, what we saw was that the war was covered differently in different places. It was a different war if you lived, you know, and watched Al Jazeera than if you watched ABC. A totally different war. One was in America, it was the war in Iraq, and the rest of the world, it was the war on Iraq. And the frame of it was very distinctive and very different. And here, there's a great deal of sort of conformity in the coverage, with almost everybody covering the same thing in the same way.
We're talking to Danny Schechter on Media Matters today. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. We're taking phone calls, the number 333-9455. The toll-free number, 1-800-222-9455. Danny Schechter is the author of the new book, Media Wars, News at a Time of Terror, Dissecting Media Coverage After 9/11. You can find his work on the web at mediachannel.org, and he posts a log, I think, just about every day. And Danny's written many other books, one of which, The More You Watch, The Less You Know, which was sort of a combination memoir and critique of the news media industry that came out, I think, in 1997. Wasn't that right, Danny?
Right, the first edition.
The first edition, and I had the privilege of writing one of the forewords along with Jackson Brown to that book, and it's a terrific book. I can say that with all honesty. One thing before we go to the phone lines, I want to point out to our listeners, if you're interested in getting a weekly email update on our guest, upcoming and past guest, and links to their work, all you have to do is send an email to our producer, Ben Scott, and Ben's email is dbscott@uiuc.edu, or go to the Media Matters website, which you can get to off of the WILL website, which is simply will.uiuc.edu. We'll send you an email once a week. It'll give you updates on who the guests are going to be, who they have been, links to their work. We won't sell this to advertisers. There'll be no commercial messages. We won't flame you. It's just once a week, and you can get off it as soon as you get on it. So do that if you want. We have several hundred people who are doing it currently, and it seems to be a popular feature. Again, our guest today, Danny Schechter. Let's go back to the phone lines. Line 1, Urbana, you're on the air with Danny Schechter.
Yeah, hi, Danny. You know, I've got a pet question here about the nature of the whole conflict in the Middle East being rather anti-Semitic. If we go to the dictionary, we know that Semitism basically is a language grouping. And I have a major take on this question that our country's engulfed in an anti-Semitic hysteria right now. But of course, Israel's not doing anything to help this question at all. But I just wonder if you have a take on that, and I'll let you go.
Well, I mean, you know, you're putting it in a larger context, talking about all Semites, and I don't know if I would see it that way. I think many people in the Muslim world see this as a war on Islam in some way, that Islam and Muslim culture and Muslim people are being targeted here. The people in the state of Israel see a lot of the coverage as anti-Semitic, essentially arguing that criticism of Israel is itself anti-Semitic in some way.
What do you think of that argument, Danny?
I think it's really a disgrace. You know, I'm finding this all the time, and it's an attempt to bully people and to silence them from basically questioning their motives and calling them prejudice for raising these questions. There are some people who are anti-Semitic, no question. There are people motivated by a kind of hatred of Jews. But there are many Jews who are very concerned about what's happening in Israel and about the coverage of the conflict in Israel, which is, again, often just incident after incident, again, missing is all perspective. And I reject that. I think that that's a dreadful way to silence and bully people. And what we're seeing today is this bullying approach, you know, on Fox News, O'Reilly's show, and other places, where people who dare speak out find themselves baited and attacked. I mean, Ashley Banfield, not known as a political activist, gave a speech in Kansas at Kansas State University. She said, it wasn't a very deep analysis, but she said, you know, look, the war was sanitized. We never really saw people, the bloodshed of war. And Ted Koppel said something similar. But Ashley Banfield was brought in by her bosses, scolded for doing it. A number of reports have suggested that her job is on the line there. And this guy named Michael Savage, who works at MSNBC now, replacing Phil Donahue, calls her a slut on the air, okay? And Rush Limbaugh suggests that she should get a job with Al Jazeera. In other words, baiting her, attacking her personally, demonizing her for daring to express a personal perspective. And this silencing of debate and silencing of discussion is part of the polarization in the media that's quite frightening. There's a hidden reason to all of this, by the way, that hasn't been discussed either.
Okay, what is it?
Well, I think it has to do with an issue that you've been very involved in, which is the FCC hearings, FCC decision, which is expected on June 2nd. You know, while the war was going on, the big media companies were lobbying very strongly for their own interests to try to deregulate broadcasting. And because they have a big stake in this, a big financial stake in winning these changes, which will further concentrate power in the media industry, many, in my view, you know, are afraid to take on the administration or to challenge the administration in any way, to call attention to themselves, because they're trying to push through an agenda. Of course, the FCC is dominated by Colin Powell's son, Michael Powell, who has said, by the way, that one reason why more media consolidation is needed is so that we have media companies that can cover the war the way this one was covered, okay? So there's a direct link between the war and this FCC business, but nobody's covering that, and in fact, the media, by and large, is not covering the FCC hearings or all of these issues because their interests are directly involved. And it's a disgrace, if you will. It's one of the most underreported stories in America.
We're talking to Danny Schechter today in Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. Danny is the longtime and legendary journalist, the author of the new book, Media Wars. If you'd like to call in and ask Danny a question or make a comment, the number here is 333-9455 and the toll-free number for around the state or around the country, 1-800-222-9455. Danny, while we're on the subject, we'll get to this FCC stuff a little bit later, but I want to get back to the coverage of the war, which you've been talking about. What are some of the stories that have been missed in the U.S. news media that someone who perused media from Europe or Asia or some other part of the world might be exposed to on a routine basis?
Well, you know, first of all, of course, the whole focus on the weapons of mass destruction before the war started and the kind of downplaying of those weapons after the war started. That's a key one.
Mm-hmm.
The civilian casualties in Iraq were downplayed on American television. If you remember, Tommy Franks said, "We don't do body counts." You know, that was his response. The U.S. government declined to offer any estimate or to follow and track the civilian casualties. The question, the use of cluster bomb weapons, which often are targeted at civilian populations with a terribly devastating impact. The U.S. government's only said that there were 1,000 or used. In fact, ex-military specialists are saying that many, many more than that were used. We saw the picture of the Saddam statue falling.
Yeah, I saw that about 100 times. What's the story there?
Which vindicated, you know, which was used to vindicate the war, but actually photographs that were published on a number of internet sites, indie media sites, showed the actual square that this happened in. First of all, conveniently, it was just across the street from the hotel housing the journalists, the Palestine Hotel, which the U.S. military had actually lobbed a tank shell into, killing two people, claiming that they didn't know journalists were there after that hotel had been shown on every newscast in the world for 3 weeks straight. But this particular statue was right across from the journalists' hotel. The whole square was basically surrounded by military people. There was a tank in each corner of it. All the coverage with tight shots showing people kind of attacking the statue when it fell. But when you saw the other shots, the far shots, you saw that there were very, very few people in the square at all. You found out that no other statues had been attacked beforehand, just that one, that it was a U.S. tank, a U.S. military vehicle that actually brought the statue down, not the people of Iraq, and that there were people identified in the crowd who were part of the entourage of this man, Shalabi, who is the Iraqi exile who left Iraq in the late 70s, who is the kind of person that Donald Rumsfeld wants to run the country, wants to run Iraq. And his aide, who was shown in a photograph a day earlier, happened to mysteriously be part of the entourage surrounding all this. It had all the looked to me like a totally staged event and a phonied-up event. And that criticism, even, that debate about it, wasn't even raised on American TV. I mean, there's a debate now about whether or not the aircraft carrier that George Bush went to was close to shore or not, whether he needed a jet to go there or he needed a helicopter to go there. But this incident, which was the classic photograph of the whole war, was not really discussed at all on American television. And what's interesting about it is that there was an American a soldier from Brooklyn who just happened to be there, just happened to have an American flag that just happened to have been at Ground Zero, okay? And he put it in the face of Saddam Hussein, okay? And apparently his superior officers said that was the wrong thing to do, take it down quickly, because they wanted an Iraqi flag there for symbolic value. And he was later sort of chastised for doing it. The picture of the flag in the face was shown in every Arab newspaper as a sign of American imperialism, if you will, whereas in American media, in most American media, what was shown was, of course, the statue falling, and shown not once, not twice, but over and over and over again.
We're talking to Danny Schechter today in Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. We do have lines open. The number, 333-9455. The toll-free number, 1-800-222-9455, and we do have a caller from Paxton. Line 4, Paxton, you're on the air with Danny Schechter.
Hello.
Hello.
I wonder what part the advertisers play, because the media is pretty much beholden to the advertisers, I would think, and they are, I would assume, conservative.
Well, you know, in many instances, the companies, the media companies themselves, are doing business with the government. NBC, which was sort of considered to be the leader in coverage on the network side of the war, of course, is part of General Electric, which has contracts with the various military companies and is a kind of booster of coverage. And before the war, actually, because of a consultant's report, fired Phil Donahue, who was then the number one ratings getter on the channel because he had too many anti-war guests. She had nothing to, apparently, those anti-war guests were good enough to get the highest ratings on the channel, but not something that the NBC people wanted. He was fired, replaced by conservatives. During parts of the war, of course, advertising was removed from television, but did get replaced afterwards. And, you know, you've seen a lot of appropriation of, you know, support our troops and this type of thing in some of the advertising. I think most advertisers don't want to be involved in a kind of something that could be controversial and redound against them. But if it involves patriotism, many are quite excited about identifying themselves with that.
I think the caller also meant beyond just the wars in general, the effect of advertising on the content of journalism being a conservatizing effect, if it has an effect.
Oh, I think dramatically so. I think, if you look at the Sunday morning talk shows, which I did today, you find General Electric, one of the big sponsors, other big companies advertising, and bringing you these programs. And if these programs were more diverse in their guest lists and more diverse in their approach, I don't think you would find the same level of advertising support. So advertisers are clearly part of the club here and are drivers in the whole media system. They set the stage, and many of these companies are very proactive when it comes to furthering their political agendas and their economic agendas.
Well, you worked, you had a show that was aired on PBS for many years. Was it South Africa Today? Is that the?
Yeah, South Africa Now.
South Africa Now, excuse me. And then you've also done the show Human Rights and Wrongs. And so you've had a lot of experience with PBS, which does not have formal advertising.
Right.
Was it an easier venue to work in than working?
No, it really wasn't, actually. There was a lot more bureaucratic conservatism there and fear of alienating potential underwriters and sponsors. We had a station in Texas who told us a program that focused on apartheid was, quote, not corporate friendly, and it was a reason for rejecting the program. PBS told us that human rights was not a sufficient organizing principle for a TV series, okay, unlike cooking, okay, which is on public television considered a sufficient organizing principle. So we had a battle all the way down the line with PBS stations to get programming on the air and to get programming seen. And in many cases, most recently, we did a documentary called Counting on Democracy, which is a film about what really happened in the Florida election in the 2000, with working with Greg Palast, the journalist from Britain, who investigated the voter purge and others. And, you know, PBS had a choice, present our program or present a program with Daryl Hammond, who's on Saturday Night Live, a comedian, and they presented the comedian's hosted program and not our investigative program. But thanks to ITVS, the Independent Television Service, we were able to get it on many stations. But, you know, if the National Programming Service at PBS doesn't pick it up, it's much harder to get it on all over the country in a time period when you can promote it. So there's a definite problem there for independent journalists getting their work seen.
We're talking to Danny Schechter on Media Matters today. The number 333-9455, toll free, 1-800-222-9455. We've got a couple callers I'm going to get to. I hope they'll be patient. Let me inform you, though, who our guests are going to be in the upcoming shows. 1 week from today, our guest will be Dean Baker, the economist, the media economist, talking about the upcoming FCC rulemaking on media ownership and other issues. 2 weeks from today, Jenny Toomey, the executive director of the Future Music Coalition, will be talking about musicians, music industry issues. Then 3 weeks today, Christian Sandvig, a member of the faculty here at the University of Illinois, will be talking about Wi-Fi and the new generation of internet connectivity and how it is changing our lives and what the issues are involved in it. So those are our next few shows. Stay tuned to Media Matters. We've got a bank of phone calls. I'm going to get to all of them right now. Let's start with line 4 from a highway in central Illinois. Fire. Hello?
Yes.
Yeah, please go ahead. You can go ahead, sir.
What I was calling about was I really didn't want to change the subject just a little bit, but I wanted to find out what Mr. Schechter thinks about these right-wing programs. That are they telling the truth, or how much factual information is coming from them to whenever they criticize liberals or whatever, but, you know, this type of thing that's going on. Is it, what does he think about what it does to this country, and is it accurate, or is it a lot of misinformation coming out?
All right, thank you. Danny, I've got a feeling I know your answer to this question.
Well, you know, we have a situation today where there are three times as many pundits, opinionizers on TV as journalists. So a lot of the programs on television are really people offering opinions and points of view. And many of those programs are dominated by conservatives. They say, you know, the range is from A to B. A full range of issues are not being debated. You know, is it true? Well, truth is in the eye of the beholder. In many instances, truth is distorted to try to promote an agenda and is applied hypocritically. You know, President Clinton, told the mistruth in terms of his sex life. That was a big story for like a year and a half, you know. President Bush is deceptive on other things. It's a momentary flash in the pan. I think that the effect of like Fox News and of the Murdoch influence on American journalism is very pernicious, because what happens is that other channels respond by trying to out-Fox Fox, to actually move to the right of the right. And so it has an effect on the whole media spectrum. And unfortunately, what's missing, of course, is any competition from the other side of the perspective. In other words, liberal voices, voices to the left of the liberal voices, are frozen out almost totally, partly because they themselves don't make media an issue the way they could or should, partly because the system acts to, in a sense, push them out of the debate.
Now, of course, Fred Barnes and many conservatives, Bill O'Reilly, Rush Limbaugh, will be quick to say the reason why there aren't liberals or progressives on the air is that no one wants to hear them, that if there was an audience for these people, that owners would, of course, and advertisers would, of course, put them there because it'd be in their economic self-interest to do so. How do you respond to that, Danny?
Well, I mean, first of all, you know, program about written by a liberal, West Wing, became the most popular program, you know, on television. You know, the idea.
What was that, Survivor? I mean,
West Wing.
Oh, okay.
Which, you know, which is now being diluted. Adam Sorkin, the lead writer, has left. Partly, I'm told, because of political reasons. I think it's not true that people don't want to hear other voices. Of course, people who are dominating the discourse say that because it's in their interest to say that. But, you know, it's not just getting on the air. It's getting on the air with enough of a budget to promote what you're doing, to build momentum, to market your ideas, et cetera, and so forth. I mean, if your program, Bob, was put on, you know, NPR nationally, as it should be, I think you would build a very, very lively and big audience. Why? Because people are very interested in this issue. 70% of the American people say they don't like, they have serious problems with media coverage. 70% of the people working in the media also feel the same way. There needs to be more aggressive coverage of all of this, and I think that there is a market for it.
All right. We're talking to Danny Schechter today on Media Matters. Let's go back to our phone lines. Line 1, Urbana, you're on the air with Danny Schechter.
Good afternoon. I just wonder whether we can extend this analysis a little bit further and ask the question whether in this country, by comparison to other countries, there are public media at all. One often has the impression that the media are part of the security apparatus and are under close government surveillance. And part of the government and military propaganda. And in newspapers, we find what seem to be organized contributions from right-wing institutions and so forth. And at talk shows, one has the impression that there are phone-ins at times that are planted from right-wing organizations. There is a taboo also on raising fundamental questions that cast any doubt on the veracity of government, for instance, from the Kennedy administration to certain questions surrounding 9/11, why was there no intercept of the flights and so on and so forth. So that are the media here representative of civil society, or are they actually indistinguishable from a government that is in league with corporations and so forth?
Well, you know, you can make that critique in a broad brush way, and, you know, people who believe it already believe it. I think the problem is it's not true always, but it's often true, particularly in the event of major events like war. You know, after the Gulf War I, Michael Deaver, who was the president's PR advisor, you know, said that if you were to hire a public relations firm to do the media relations for an international event, it couldn't be done any better than this is being done. Hadding Carter, who was President Carter's chief flack, said, if I were the government, I'd be paying the press for the coverage it's getting. In this particular war, Kenneth Bacon, who was a Wall Street Journal reporter and then became President Clinton's media spinner at the Pentagon, you know, basically said that the administration couldn't have done better if it had hired actors to cover these conflicts, you know. So clearly there's been an orchestration, if you will. In the current issue of Vanity Fair, it says that the journalists are just pushovers. They're not intentionally, you know, playing the role of pawns, you know, in the information war, but they're just pushovers by an administration that bullies them. I think that lets them off the hook. I think there is a kind of military media merger when it comes to war, partly because no media outlet wants to be left out. They all want access. They all want to be able to report from the inside, that therefore they don't want to alienate the Pentagon. And in many instances, the Pentagon has had a disproportionate influence over not only the coverage, but the spin of the coverage, the storyline that we're seeing played out. And it's very dangerous for democracy. I mean, we see, you know, we looked at Argentina during the, you know, period when the military ran things. There were generals on TV. In America, there are generals on TV. I mean, it's Michael Moore, you know, made the comment. He demanded the unilateral withdrawal of the military from America's TV stations.
You know, but Danny, at the same time, you know, the caller makes that point. You're agreeing with the caller about how the media so closely parrots the interests of the military and the powers that be in this country. There are bestsellers atop the bestseller list, like Bernard Goldberg's and Sean Hannity's and Ann Coulter's, all of which are premised in the idea that the media are hostile in general to the military, hostile to business, and that the people who are journalists in this country are predominantly people from the political left or certainly liberal, and people who, you know, are not to be trusted in media because they are contemptuous of American values. How do you deal with that argument?
Well, I mean, I hear that argument. You know, you look back at when did the words liberal, media, elite become one word? Okay. Mm-hmm. It became one word when John Podhoretz, who was then involved in, before he became involved in the Murdoch media, but was an editor of, I think, one of Murdoch's weekly Standard, began to focus on that week after week about the liberal media elite. And then afterwards he said, oh, we just made that up because it was a good galvanizing issue for the Republican base. There's a great deal of media manipulation here, and the best defense is often an offense. And we've seen this on the right, an aggressive attempt to project onto liberals and the left what they're actually doing with a tremendous amount of denial and effective propaganda spin. You know, Sean Hannity has a very big talk radio show on ABC in New York and is also on Fox News. Bernard Goldberg was fired, in a sense, by CBS and then wrote this book as a vituperative attack on his former colleagues at CBS. His whole big issue was the flat tax, you know, which turned out to be preposterous. And yet he built the whole book around this. And I've reviewed that on Media Channel. It has almost no evidence in it whatsoever. But yet he got on, you know, 80 different media outlets or more than that talking about making these charges. And it's part of a media war that's going on, hence the title of my book. It's a war within the media. It's a war between media outlets. And it's a war to use media, in a sense, to further a political agenda. And this is what, you know, if you look on most of the networks in America, where are left voices? Where are really liberal voices that are not simply reporters? Where are they having the kind of access to a soapbox that they have on Fox News? Nowhere, really.
Well, Bill O'Reilly, when questioned on that, will say that NPR and PBS provide the left alternative.
Well, I've been looking for it for many years as a producer. I haven't really found it. I mean, at PBS, for example, there's a whole battle that's gone on for 15, 20 years between people who are on the progressive side of the spectrum who do excellent films and documentaries and other work who can't get them on PBS and don't get any support from PBS. And yet, when they're able to get proper funding, like a Michael Moore, whatever you thought of his movie Bowling Columbine, they become big sellers. He wins the Oscar. He wins a tremendous amount of recognition for his work. There's a market for it. There's a lot of respect for it. But it doesn't get the institutional support and the funding support that many conservatives got. I mean, David Horowitz, the kind of neocon who spends most of his time attacking his former friends on the left, revealed, you know, that he was able to walk into PBS and walk out with a tremendous amount of funding because he was arguing that the PBS was unbalanced. And then he was later embroiled in a lawsuit with his partner, who he claims cheated him out of the money that should have been his. But that's how we know about it, that the PBS president met with him and arranged to give money from both PBS and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting to support his ideological programming. Well, at the same time and in the same period, we were trying to get support for human rights programming to talk about Saddam Hussein, and we were shot down continually.
We're talking to Danny Schechter. There are phone lines open. I'm going to get right back to them. There's been someone who's been waiting patiently, but if you'd like to call in, we have time to take a couple more calls. The number is 333-9455, the toll-free number 800-222-9455. Danny Schechter is the author of the new book, Media Wars, News at a Time of Terror, Dissecting Media Coverage After 9/11. You can find his work also on the web, where he has a web blog every day on the wonderful site mediachannel.org. Now let's go back to the phone lines. Line 2, Urbana, thank you for your patience. You're on the air with Danny Schechter.
Hi. Two things. Often when I hear the term embedded reporters, embedded with the troops, I think that maybe sometimes the phrase might better be in bed with, as opposed to just embedded.
Mm-hmm.
But then the other thing I wanted to say was this whole thing about bringing democracy to Iraq. It has to have been on NPR that I heard a report about an initial vote being taken in, must have been Baghdad, I'm not sure where, but they gathered men according to their ethnic groups, and they reported someone in charge calling each group out to go and do their vote, and they talked about how the number of men being included in this vote. Not a single mention of the other half of the population, the women. And I don't read the New York Times, I haven't noticed, I can't say that I'm a media junkie, but so far I haven't noticed anybody talking about the women being included in this so-called democracy that we're trying to help create. Have you?
Well, the irony, of course, is that in Iraq, Iraq was a secular state. It was a dictatorship. It was a brutal dictatorship. But women probably had the most, had achieved the most status in almost any other Arab country. And so you had a lot of women in important positions in Iraq, and you know, what's going to happen now is really remains to be seen, because, of course, there are now calls among some of the Shia, you know, for an Islamic state there. And, of course, many of them have very strong views about putting women, you know, kind of in the back, and there's a lot of oppression. So that remains to be seen. But certainly you haven't heard American officials, Jay Garner and et al., speaking out strongly for women's rights in the new Iraq, and we haven't seen many women playing leadership roles in Iraq. We don't see them on TV during the whole war. You didn't see that many women correspondents. There were a few, and experts talking about these issues.
It's hard to avoid the conclusion that the interest in women's rights in the Middle East by the U.S. government might be not the most principled. I mean, we heard a lot about it in the case of Afghanistan and less here. And do you know what the state of women is in Afghanistan today after the liberation of the country?
Well, it's going backwards. And in fact, our company, working with a female producer who, you know, my partner has been to Kabul, Rory O'Connor, investigating the status of women. And what we're finding is great difficulty in getting interest in any media outlets in covering the story. We have fantastic material, fantastic interviews, and footage about the struggle of women in Afghanistan for their rights and for change in that country. And, you know, nobody wants to pay attention to it in the way that they should, in my opinion, although it looks like there's a lot of, you know, a lot of big problems coming from the United States in Afghanistan now. The Taliban is reorganizing, and the whole war is hardly over.
Where's bin Laden, by the way?
He's not here.
He's
not here, but there are, again, reports coming out of some of our partner sites, Asia Times Online and others, reporting of new threats, of new terrorist attacks by a reorganized al-Qaeda. You know, again, I don't think that conflict is over yet either. You know, we're in a very volatile situation. Before the war started, the United States was out of step with world opinion, clearly, and media outlets, clearly. And now that it's over, or quote over, there's a lot of criticism still, you know, of what the United States achieved and the cost that it achieved it. I mean, the head of the BBC, Greg Dyke, uncharacteristically criticized American television for the way in which jingoism and journalism were fused at the hip. And we haven't seen, you know, that was, and this was our ally.
Yeah,
Britain,
that's right.
You know? So that was very unique, very, very, very interesting.
Let's go back to the phone lines. We have a caller from Vandalia, Illinois. Please, you're welcome to be on the air with Danny Schechter.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have just a couple quick questions and an observation. I guess my first question would be probably maybe the easiest or the hardest would be if maybe you could tell me what the timeline would be as to when you could identify when the press and the government and the people and the public went liberal and started this liberal assassination and it wasn't fair for liberals. I mean, when did this take place? Is it the last couple of years, or has the liberals always been down on the ballot of equity, or has this just been recent? Or I mean, can
well,
you
first of all,
yeah, let's get both parts of the question because we have a pretty poor connection, and then we'll let you hang up and listen.
Okay.
Yeah. What's the second part of the question?
And the second part of the question is, what do you think we could do to, like, make the playing field even? Last law is to say that it's to equal time given on the public and commercial stations, media coverage, to make, you know, if one person gets so many inches in a column, the other person does, or so many persons are on this program or this network. I'll hang up and listen to see what you might feel that, you know, we could do to make it equitable and change all the problems.
Thank you, Vandalia. Yeah, Danny, what do you...
Well, I mean, very, very good question.
Yeah.
I mean, the conflict, the debate about media coverage of war goes back to Vietnam in recent years, and the Pentagon felt the media, in a sense, lost the war for them and have been sort of attempting to manage and manipulate media coverage ever since, and I think achieved a tremendous victory during this last war, where they were really setting the tone of the coverage and its direction, and had done an excellent job, and they were very happy with the coverage. I mean, Ali North, the Iran-Contra figure, was saying, you know, we'll see many more embedded journalists in the future. The other question you raise is a very important one, and maybe a good one to kind of end with, because what do we do about this media system? How do we, as citizens, as listeners, as people who care about our country, what do we do? How do we get involved? And this, to me, is the challenge that we all have. First, we have to realize that media is an issue, that media has to become not just a complaint, something we whine about, but something we do something about and work on. I mean, Bob McChesney, your host, is involved in organizing a new organization, which is very promising, to try to put media reform on the political agenda where it isn't right now. I think that's very important. Secondly, I think we have to inform ourselves, arm ourselves with information. My book, Bob's book, Media Channel, the media reform website that Bob is launching, all of these things have information that we need to know about how the media operates, because most public opinion is being shaped by what people see and what they hear. And then finally, you have to think about what we can do about this, how we can feed back into the media, how we can protest coverage when it's deeply flawed, how we can encourage people in the media that we support and like and try to help them, how we can create new media and support independent media. All of these are the challenges of trying to turn media from a problem into something that we just complain about into something that we do something about.
Danny, we've only got about a minute left. Let's go to one last caller who's been very patient. Line one, Champagne, can you make it short and quick?
Yeah, I just wanted to respond to the woman who asked about whether there was any question about women's involvement in Iraq. And I wanted to say that I belong to a listserv of Middle Eastern women who are professionals. I'm not a Middle Eastern woman, but on the issue of Middle Eastern women. And the State Department actually sent out an advertisement asking for gender analysts. But there was a discussion on that listserv among the women, American and Middle Eastern, and the question was, you know, do Iraqi women need American feminists to tell them what to do, or would Middle Eastern women or American women that are experts on the situation want to be co-opted by a militaristic ideology or an imperialist project? So those are just some of the issues. I know there's not a lot of time to talk about that.
Well, thank you very much, caller, for calling us and letting us know about that. I do hear the band tuning up in the background, Danny Schechter, which usually means they're trying to push me out of the studio. We have a few seconds, Danny. Why don't you just give a closing comment, if you would. Tell people where they can find out about your book and what you're doing at Media Channel.
Yeah, look, help us, people. If you care about any of these issues, help us. Come and become part of MediaChannel.org. Sign up for our email list. Sign up for my column. You can get it every day. Tell other people about it. Help me get my book out and the word about media wars out to a larger audience. My email is Danny@MediaChannel.org. Danny@MediaChannel.org.
And on that note, Danny Schechter, I want to thank you. I'm Bob McChesney, the host of Media Matters. We'll be back next week, and I want to thank Ben Scott, the producer. See you later.